welcome to another edition of the View from the Bleachers Radio. I am your host, Joe Aiello, and today I'm joined by Sean Powell. Josh is on assignment with work. For those of you who don't know, Josh is very much into college athletics, and so he has a college event that's keeping up his time today. So we are flying just Sean and I, and that's okay. We've got a lot to talk about, Sean, so why don't we tell everyone where they can find us and then get right to it. For us, you can follow us on Twitter at VFTB, that's at View from the Bleachers, but abbreviated. And then you can follow Sean at Powell_Sean, and Sean is spelled S-E-A-N. You can follow Josh at JCStats, and you can email the show at viewfromthebleachers@gmail.com. We love your submissions. We love your feedback. So please don't hesitate to use any of those mediums to contact us. We love being interactive, and we've got some interactive feedback that we've gotten this week from the Twitter site that we're going to address later on in the mailbag section. But, Sean, let's jump right into week one of the regular season. I don't want to alarm you, and I'm really not trying to scare you here, but I don't know if you saw, but the Cubs are ranked 30th in the latest ESPN power ranking. Did you have a chance to see that?
No, I didn't see it, but, I'm not that surprised.
I was actually thinking about posting an over-under question on whether or not they would be over or under the whatever ranking came out today, and then I looked and I was like, well, crap, they're 30th. How could I possibly make an over-under question on that? But at the same time, I think we may be able to find a way to be under 30 next week. You never know.
Yeah.
But week one is in the books, and so let's talk a little bit about that. We kind of highlighted some things in our pre-show notes in terms of what we want to talk about today. So let's start with the lack of offense. A lot of people are talking about it. And so, Sean, I want to get your opinion on what you saw offensively this week in week one from the Cubs.
Well, until yesterday when we had actually put together a really solid offensive game, it's just been obviously bad. I don't think there's any other way to look at it. But to me, honestly, it's not surprising. I don't know if anyone with realistic expectations thought that this team was going to come out of the gate and hit. Everybody's talking about the runners and scoring position thing, but really over time, averages with runners and scoring position and average overall tends to kind of gravitate together. So, a lot of that's just random fluctuations. And of course you want to see that more, but we just don't have a really great lineup. It's been a lot of platooning, mixing and matching different lineups every single day. And I think with a team like this where you don't have too many very established, consistent, really great hitters, it's probably a good approach to just try to keep mixing things up until you find a combination that works and just play the matchups the best you can. Because really, a lot of these guys are what you would call bench guys that we have to start because that's how the roster is constructed at the moment.
Yeah, we talked a little bit about this a couple of weeks ago, but the fact that you could get by without power if you had extra bases, and the Cubs sorely lack that right now. I took a look at their isolated power numbers as a team so far, and obviously a week into the season, it's a little bit of a tough number to accurately quantify. But realistically, when you look at this team right now, they rank 28th in the majors in isolated power with .078. That's not good. When we see this and we compare it to a team like, for example, I don't know if you've seen how well the Marlins are doing as a team, they're putting up runs, they're putting up extra base hits, they're doing things offensively that we are not, and so it's been a little disappointing because I can live without the power in terms of home runs, but we can't get by with this team and this offense without being able to hit some doubles and hit some triples. It's just not going to happen.
Right, I agree. And, John Arguello at Cubs Den put together a nice little piece today that I read, so I have to give him props for this, but he pointed out that we had 10 hits on Saturday and didn't score a run, but we had only 6 hits yesterday and scored 8 runs. And a lot of that was, we had some extra base hits, which was great, but also the on-base was way better. We took some walks. We saw a lot more pitches. Those guys that were at the top of the order, like Bonifacio, Kalish, were seeing pitches, getting on base, so that was a beneficial thing. So I think the two things in OPS, which is on base and slugging, we really sorely lack on both of those. So Even if a guy hits an occasional double, if no one's on base ahead of him, it's not going to make any difference, right? So, yeah, it's just a not good hitting team, and I think that's what we're going to see for a while until more talents infused into the lineup, whether that be from the minors or somewhere else.
So with that said, then, and I highlighted this in our notes, is there a particular style of baseball we should be playing, or is that overrated, or what do you think on that? There's people that will say, well, we need to play small ball and bunt guys over and get them on and get them over and get them in. There's a lot of people that argue that, bunting is wasting an out. So is there a particular style that you would like to see this team be playing under?
Yeah, I don't think so. I mean, I think if you just don't have a good lineup, there's only so much style points you can make up for. I mean, it's not like all of a sudden these guys are going to be great base runners, great bunters, good situational hitter. I don't think it's going to happen. I think you just got to let guys go up there and swing the bat. And if you're going to ask me, I don't think you want to give up outs when our on base percentage is so low.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's like, okay, you finally get a guy on, now you want to give out one of your outs just to get him over, and then you have a guy with a hit that's hitting 200 that's now responsible to get that guy in. I think you need to have, the outs are precious, you don't want to give them up, and you don't want to have a guy that could maybe get on base through walking or getting a base hit give himself up with a lineup like this, unless it's like late game tied in the ninth inning or something.
Right. Yeah, I'm not one that's gonna say every time we need to get on, we need to bunt somebody over and just play for one run. I think you're gonna lose a lot of games when you play for one run. We saw finally a multi-run inning on Sunday. It feels like we didn't have it, and I haven't checked to see, but it feels like we didn't have any of those up until that day. And so it was nice to see multi-run, and you don't get multi-run innings if you're playing for one run by bunting a guy over, giving up that out, and just shooting for one run that inning. It's just, I don't think that's the smart way to play when our offense is so bad already. I don't think we're as bad as we're going to be. I think, let me rephrase that. I don't think we're going to be as bad as we've seen. I think it's going to be better.
Yeah.
But right now, it's just not an impressive offense. But I think we're going to see better times.
Right. And, and going along with that, statistically, giving up an out in most situations hurts you more than the advantage you gain by getting the base.
Mm-hmm.
So just in that case, there's only certain scenarios late in the game when you only need one run and the game's over. Yeah, do it then. But before that, it just doesn't make any sense to me.
Well, there's a chart. I'm sure you've seen it, but maybe listeners have not, called the run expectancy matrix.
Right.
And you can just Google it, basically. But I'm looking at the matrix on the site that's put together by the book, Playing the Percentages in Baseball. And so what we'll see on this sheet here is they've run numbers for situations over the course of various decades or different eras, because obviously different play styles yields different results. And what we'll see is, if we've got a guy on first with no outs, the run expectancy there is 0.94, which means we're almost going to get a run every time. If you then put a guy on first base with one out, the run expectancy – or excuse me, on second base with one out – because we've just bunted them over, the run expectancy at that point is 0.72. So it's actually gone down the right probability that we're going to get a run. So it's not necessarily that, that we're going to necessarily score a ton of runs by just bunting them in. In fact, it actually lowers the opportunity to score a run. What drives me insane is when we're bunting a guy over, if we've got no outs and we've got a guy on second, and we're bunting him over to third as if a single can't drive him home.
Yeah, that's insane to me.
That drives me insane because at that point, run expectancy with no outs, man on second is 1.17. So we're almost guaranteed a run and some in certain circumstances. But then that man on third with one out is, where is it? Man on third, one out is 1.2. So we haven't really dramatically increased our odds of, it's 0.989, so it's gone down again.
Right.
I don't see bunting. I really don't. I don't understand why we do it, but there's a lot of different matrices there. I'll go ahead and post a link in the show notes to that so people can check that out. I enjoy seeing that and just kind of getting an idea, because I think sometimes managers just follow what is considered the baseball norm and don't really look at the numbers. And I think more and more, especially in football, we're seeing guys play the percentages.
Totally. You know, and it drives me crazy, too, when you have guys up there bunting that can park a ball in the seats with any swing.
Mm-hmm.
Like Junior Lake, for some reason, likes to pull up and try to bunt a lot. Now, he's a fast guy, and maybe he's trying to bunt for a hit, but if the guy can put a run on the board with one swing, please don't take that out of your arsenal. You know, yeah. It just drives me nuts to see somebody do that.
Yeah, I agree. I'm not a big fan of sacrifice bunts. Now, that's not to say that there's not a need for it. There is a time and a place. Obviously, when we were watching that 16-inning game, at that point, we're not playing for multiple runs. We're playing for one so that we can go to bed. So it's not a matter of, you know, hey, we need to put a four spot on this inning. We need to put one run on the board, bring in anybody but Jose Veras, and move forward here.
Yeah.
So with that, it's a perfect segue. Let's talk a little bit about Jose Veras. If you had a chance as a listener to watch the games this week, you saw two outings by Jose Veras. Both of them were less than stellar. Sean, I'm going to just pose a pretty blunt question. How long will Jose Veras be the team's closer, and how long should he be?
Well, I don't think it's time to pull the plug yet. And in fact, I was actually glad they got him into a game that was a blowout at the moment, even though he made it interesting at least. Just to, you know, give him some work with live batters, try to get his groove. Obviously, it didn't work, but I think that the idea of it was good. Yeah, I think if this team is, I mean, as you said, ranked 30th, and it doesn't look like we're anywhere close to some kind of competitive ball club at this point, you sign the guy to be the closer, and honestly, I think he was signed so he could close, do well, and be traded at the trade deadline. And if that's what you're going to do, you got to ride him out a little bit more, because either way, if he just blows it and he's terrible, he doesn't have value. But if you pull the plug on him, he doesn't have value either. So I think you got to wait it out, and I mean, if he just has lost it and can't pitch anymore, sure, you got to change, and you can't, you know, make Renteria lose every game that way. But yeah, we got to ride him out a little bit longer. He's had a history of being a good solid pitcher. He had a great year last year, so it could just be some mechanical tweak or something that he can work with Bosio on and fix and get back on track. The one thing you wonder about is if he's hurt. Because he's not, like, just not pitching well. Some of his stuff is just missing, like, by feet. So, I don't know. I wonder if there's something nagging him that we don't know about. You'd almost kind of hope that's the case, just because that would explain it.
Yeah, I think it was Noah also who actually tweeted that to me, or posted that on our Facebook page. If you haven't liked us on Facebook, shameless plug, go ahead and do that as well. But Noah actually said the same thing. You know, he wonders if something's physically wrong with Veras because he's throwing all of his breaking pitches in the right-hander's batted box.
Yeah.
I don't know. I have a short fuse when it comes to relievers, and I'm not a fan of paying for relievers, which is what the Cubs did.
Right.
I just don't like it. And so I've been a guy that's been a Pedro Strop guy from the time when we got him last year. I thought he should have been the closer down the stretch over Kevin Gregg. I thought he should have been the closer going into spring training. And I'm still under the mind that I think he should be the closer. I have no problem if Renteria were to pull the plug on Veras right now and say, hey, look, you're not in our long-term future. We brought you here as kind of a stopgap. And, you know, I'm going to go ahead and go with somebody else for right now. And when you show a little bit more, or if Pedro Strop shows that he can't do the job, then at that point we'll make a decision. But I don't see why. I think last year we saw so many games just get blown that I think it really hurts the pitching staff when you see your games that you've worked hard as a starter to win, and you see it yield nothing, essentially. So
right, yeah.
I would very much be in favor of pulling the plug on Jose Veras. I know it's literally a week in, but I just didn't think he was the guy from the beginning.
So if you say, like, what's the timeline, you'd say right now. Just go ahead and do it now.
Yeah, I would do it now because I don't think he should have been in that role from the beginning.
Well, yeah, there you go.
So I'm fine with pulling the plug now.
I think they're going to have a shorter fuse on him than they had with Marmol, just because they're not paying him what they paid Marmol, and you know, I don't think they want to go through that again. So I think if, you know, another week or two of this. And the good thing, too, is we have a much deeper bullpen now, so we can mix and match, and there's guys in AAA that Roscup and other guys that could make the team. So I think we have a lot more flexibility to be able to do that this year than we did. So, you know, I think if he continues on this track, you're going to see him pulled soon.
Yeah, most definitely. Overall, segueing into our next topic, the pitching has been very good in week one. I think we saw that throughout the week. Really, there wasn't a game that when you look at it, you said, boy, we really got hit hard today. You know, every single starter kept the Cubs in it, and every single time, you know, with the exception of Varus, I felt like every reliever did their job and some every time they got into the game.
Totally. The pitching has been awesome. I mean, it's really, really easy to dwell on the negative because, you know, we have a losing record and the hitting has just been really just boring and soul-crushing to watch, except for yesterday. But, man, the pitching staff has just killed it. All the starters look great, as you said. And some of these bullpen guys are looking really impressive. I've really been impressed with Grimm and Rondon have looked really great. Mm-hmm. I mean, Rondon looks like he's 96-mile-an-hour fastball, sharp breaking ball. I mean, he looks like the real deal this year, and so does Justin Graham. Those guys are really exciting me.
What did you think about Jesus?
What?
Brian Schlitter, Jesus.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, he looks good, too. No complaints with any of the pitching staff, really. I mean, Villanueva has been the goat in two games, but he came back
but yeah,
a nice five
really
innings
good.
The other day.
Yeah, he really looked good on Sunday, so I was happy with what he gave us. I made the prediction that, you know, the Cubs bullpen would be a top five in ERA when all was said and done. We're not there. We're eight in the National League, but I think part of that is because of
Varus.
Jose Varus. You
totally.
Take him out of the equation, and all of a sudden that bullpen looks lights out. But, you know, I think that this team, I don't think Jose Varus is bad as we're giving him a hard time about, but I think that overall he was the weakest link this week, and so he deserves the criticism. But I'm excited with the bullpen that we got this season, and I think that there's more. What I'm most encouraged by is there's more arms that could potentially contribute.
Yeah.
Whether it's Blake Parker or Aroldis Vizcaíno, we haven't even seen these guys yet this year, and
right.
You know, and we're already not even needing them at this point.
Yeah, there's some great guys who you mentioned. I think Roscup's down there. You know, Villanueva will probably slide back to the bullpen once Arrieta is ready, because
yep.
I think he's going to take his spot in the rotation. So, yeah, there's another guy that has potential. So, and the starting pitcher, Shark, has looked really great. He's looked like a top-of-the-rotation guy that either you want to sign or you want to trade for some good value. So if he keeps it up, that's going to just be a win no matter what direction the Cubs go with him. You like to see that come out strong the way he has. Travis Wood didn't have his best start, but it was pretty good. I was at that game, and that Chase Utley home run was definitely a wind home run. I mean, he didn't really nail it, but you could just see the flight of the ball was really high, and it just got carried out right. The wind was blowing that direction, so that it wasn't like he nailed Travis Wood on that one. So that's
right.
One of those Wrigley home runs, you know.
Were you at the game when Wellington Castillo hit the home run?
Yeah.
That one, as soon as he hit it on TV, I was watching it, and it just looked like a no-doubter.
Yeah, it was, and that was actually against the wind because the wind was blowing out toward right. So he kind of hit it into the teeth, and it was just a line drive. Yeah, he really nailed it.
Yeah, I mean, I was watching it, and as soon as he hit it, I was like, oh, he crushed it.
Yeah.
You know, it was just a shot. It was one of those ones where I think I posted on the post that it was one of those ones that I basically – dropped my scorebook and just watched it, you know, admired it as if I was hitting it because I didn't need to run it out. You know,
right.
it was just crushed. And that was fun to see. Also cool to see, completely off topic, but I don't know. Do you have MLB.TV?
Yes.
So I use it. I'll be honest and open. I steal Jeremiah's connection. But he says I can use it. So I guess I'm borrowing it. Well, anyways, so I'm watching on MLB.TV, and this year they have, in the in-between innings, they show these little commercials, and there's commercials of old highlights from different baseball games. And have you seen the one with Glenn Allen Hill hitting the ball onto,
oh, yeah.
onto the rooftop?
I remember that game. Like, I watched that game live on WGN when I was a kid, and I remember it when it happened. And that's such an epic.
Oh, it is a beast of a shot. I mean, when you see it and you're like, oh, my gosh. I don't remember what the final tape on that in terms of distance was, but I want to say that I heard somewhere that it was like 500.
And I think it had to be. And if you go to Wrigleyville and you look at, you know, out on the street and you see that building and the rooftop and you just think about how far that is. I mean, that is.
Yeah.
Now, it could have been pharmaceutically aided, but still a shot.
I'm okay with that, but that's a topic for another time.
Right.
Moving on, two guys that had hopefully somewhat of a rebound in week one, Anthony Rizzo and Starlin Castro. I don't think that their week ones were as desirable as we would have wanted, but let's take a look and kind of look at Starlin Castro's week and Anthony Rizzo's week and kind of evaluate what we saw from these two this year. This is a big year for both of them, and you know, overall, were you pleased or how did you feel about each one's week?
I would say more pleased than disappointed. Not, you can't get like thrilled or excited, but
yeah.
Castro had a few games where he looked really bad, but I think the overall week he had some multi-hit games. He had a nice day yesterday, Saturday and Sunday were both nice days, multi-hit games. Made a couple of errors, but you know, that's the way it goes. Rizzo, I think, looked terrible in his first start against Liriano. I mean, he just looked awful against Liriano, but since then he hasn't looked awful. I mean, he held his own against Cliff Lee, another tough lefty. A couple of hits yesterday. He's driven in some runs. He's hit a home run. So it's not like they're off to scorching starts, but there's nothing that concerns me about him, and Castro seems to be back to health. And you have to kind of remember, too, with Castro, he had such a short spring training. He's still really in spring training mode, getting back into the swing of things.
Yeah, I thought Castro looked okay. I was very pleased with Rizzo, and I posted it on my site or on the site today that I thought he was improving versus lefties. I thought he had some really good at-bats against Cliff Lee, and I thought that the at-bat that he had against, I think his name is Diekman from Philly,
yeah.
who from what I saw about this guy was just a beast when it came to how he handled lefties. And just in terms of what his success was, I'm trying to call up his career splits here from the Phillies. But just I thought that when, you know, as I was watching him and just how difficult it would be to see his fastball coming in at you from a left-hander standpoint, I thought Rizzo did really well, at least holding his own and having a decent at-bat against him. So I was impressed with what we saw from Rizzo this week. I didn't think that he was going to be super dominant with two of the lefties that he was going to face, but I'm impressed with him. I thought that he did well enough to at least rebound from that opening start where he was just awful. Like you said, it just, you know, three strikeouts, striking all of them out on the slider, and just looking awful doing it. So I was impressed. I thought it was okay. Castro, you know, he is what he is. You know, disappointing error yesterday. Thankfully, it didn't cost the Cubs anything. But, you know, I don't know what it's going to take to get him to perform like we saw him in his rookie year and his second year. I just don't know what the problem is, because I want to see that guy that slaps the ball and you know, hits 200 hits and just, I don't know what happened, but it's just not there right now.
No, you're right, but we'll see what happens this year. Like I said, he basically had like a week of spring training.
Yeah.
Still cold weather. Hasn't been in the groove of the game much, but I think some of the multi-hit games he's had this weekend were encouraging, and hopefully that's a trend, you know, and that gets his confidence up. And I'm with you on Rizzo, though. I'm really bullish on Rizzo. I think you see him making adjustments, and he's definitely working hard, and he's got the talent to put it together. So I think he's going to have a nice year.
Yeah, most definitely. I'm looking over here at this Jake Diekman's splits here. Baseball Reference doesn't do the best job here in terms of splits, but he has 132 plate appearances versus lefties and only 44 strikeouts. I would have thought that would have been more just because his stuff was nasty. But, I thought Rizzo did really well to face him. I thought I was pleased with what we saw.
Yeah.
So overall, week one, 2-4. It's not ideal, but I'm okay with 2-4. It's not, you know, it's not the worst that it could have been. We are ranked 30th, so there's nowhere to go but up. But we've got a tough week coming up, and it'll be interesting to see what happens there. So let's move on to some mailbag questions, and then we'll finish it out with some over-under questions.
Cool.
We've got some mailbag questions that came in late last night when I put a call on Twitter. And so we've got a couple of questions that are, for the most part, rapid fire. We can probably get through them pretty quickly. First one comes from Todd Meyer. His Twitter handle, for sake of plugging, is at Todd1967. I can't remember if Todd was one of our podcast winners or not. I think he was. But Todd asks, at Chris Bryant's current pace, how long until he reaches AAA? Well, Todd, it will not be tonight because I just pulled up the roster or the lineups for tonight, and Chris Bryant is not in the lineup tonight. He is out of the lineup tonight. As far as I know, just rest. So he won't be going there tonight. But
unless they pulled him to take him to
Iowa.
That's right.
He has been pulled to
Iowa. 1 week.
No, Bryant has hit 2 home runs, though, so far this year, as far as I know. I don't think he hit a third one yet. Yeah. What do you think? When do we see him in AAA?
I don't know. Well, you know, the philosophy of this front office, they've always talked about getting the 500 at-bats per level.
Yeah.
Now, but with the caveat saying that every player has to be treated individually, and you have to do what they need.
Mm-hmm.
So you could say, well, he'll spend the whole year in AA. He'll start in AAA next year. But Bryant is a more advanced player than a lot. He's a college hitter, so he's had more experience. He's older. He's you know, everyone says he's got a great approach, and he's already pretty ready for the majors. He's pretty close. I don't know. It's hard to say. Some people say he could be called to the majors this year, like in September, which is possible. I mean, I guess he could be the guy that that skips AAA. But I don't see it with these guys, especially because there's no real rush. So I don't know. Maybe he – if some of the AAA guys get called up, like Baez or Alcantara this year, and he's just crushing it in AA, maybe in the middle of the summer they'd put him at the AAA and just get him ready to be in the majors soon. But certainly no sooner than that. And actually, I don't think it's probably going to be that soon. But that's as soon as I see it, mid-year.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think May or June, I think, would be my prediction. I think it'll be probably earlier than what you're thinking. And actually, I'm looking at this one just came off the wire here from Cubs Prospect Watch. Chris Bryant will have the day off today with some discomfort in his ankle. So I'm going to need to end the podcast now and just go and jump off a ledge because the world is ending. Chris Bryant is hurt. So. No, I think Bryant will probably get the promotion. Assuming that he's hitting the way he has been hitting and continues to hit that way, then he'll show that he doesn't need to be in AA anymore. I think May or June, like you said.
That would be awesome.
Yeah, and I wouldn't be surprised to see if we see him up in earlier than September. I could see him being an early August call-up would be my guess. But again, it's all contingent on hitting. If he's not hitting, he's obviously not going to keep progressing. So
yeah, Theo in the interview in the spring training game said it's all about dominating your competition.
Exactly.
I mean, it's really up to him. If he's just absolutely just hitting 3 home runs a week at AA, sure.
Mm-hmm.
And then just crushes AAA, then there's no reason to hold him back. But then there's going to be adjustment periods like with any hitter. But hey, if he does make it up that soon, that's a great sign. That means he's dominating.
Yeah, we saw it a couple years ago with Anthony Rizzo, when he was just crushing AAA pitching. I think at one point he was hitting somewhere in the neighborhood of 400 and just had, you know, 4,000 home runs, just crushing everything. And it was hard to, at that point, say, well, he still needs some seasoning. You know,
he had already been in the majors a little bit the year before with San Diego.
Yep.
So, you know, and they made some adjustments to his swing, which obviously worked, and it carried over. So, that was good.
Unfortunately, Rizzo continues to feel the need to make adjustments and not stick with a swing. So, you know, we'll see if he can stop doing that. But
yeah.
Next question comes from, I'm going to butcher this one. I believe it's Ursus Arctos. And his question says, how patient will management be with Mike Olt? Sean, I'm going to let you take this one.
I think very patient. I think there's no reason not to be at this point. I mean, if we're like fighting for a wild card, then yeah, you don't let the rookie go out there and fail. But at this point, I mean, to be honest, you gotta love the results of yesterday's game, but I wish they would just let Olt play just almost every day, you know? I mean, yeah, you want to make sure he avoids some really tough righty matchups possibly and make sure his shoulder gets enough rest so it doesn't re-aggravate. But, I mean, the guy's up there. Let's just see what he can do. Put him in the lineup. So I think they'll be really patient with him unless he's, like, making errors all the time or having a bad attitude, and there's no indication he'll be like that. So I think they'll give him all year to play and then reevaluate when the season's over.
Yep. Next question comes from David Turner, and David asks, who's a better bet to play right field next year, Chris Bryant, Jorge Soler, or Javier Baez? And so what I would ask you there is, I want you to rank them from best bet to least bet.
Best bet would be Bryant, even though I think they're going to try to keep him at third, but I think he's just, well, I'll explain that in a minute. Second would be, I guess, Soler, although I don't think Soler, all indications are he's not as ready, certainly not as ready as Baez or Bryant or even maybe Almora. Part of that is he just keeps getting hurt, so he can't stay on the field. He was out of baseball for a while there when he was defecting from Cuba and readjusting the U.S., so he lost a lot of time. And then once he got back into playing, he just keeps getting hurt over and over. So it's going to take him a little bit longer to get the Wrigley. And Baez, I think he'll be on the team, but I just don't think we want to move him out of the infield. I just don't see that happening. I mean, if he's not at short, he's going to be at second or third. I think they're going to keep him on the infield and make him just really valuable. So I don't see him ever really being an outfielder.
Didn't Jorge, and correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't Jorge Soler also get suspended for a portion of the season last year?
Yeah, I don't think it was really long, but he did have that where he was kind of going towards the bench of the other team.
Yeah, he like attacked the other team.
Yeah. So yeah. From all indications, that was isolated. We haven't seen anything like that since from him, or heard reports that he's a bad teammate, or he's started fights with guys. So hopefully that's just a one kind of deal, and that was it.
Have you ever seen the video of, and I don't remember what the minor leaguer's name was, but the guy that got, I don't remember if he was thrown at or if he was, or it missed him, but he promptly kicked the catcher in the head and then charged the mound.
I haven't seen that.
Oh man, I gotta find that, and I'll put that in the show notes if I can find it. It's an older video. It's probably 10 or 15 years old, but this guy, the pitcher in the minors goes inside on him. The batter takes exception, and before he charges the mound, just to make sure that the catcher couldn't hold him back, he literally basically kicked the catcher in the head to push him back and knock him back, and then like in the face mask, and then he charges the mound. It's insane. I'm trying to find. Let me see if I can Google it. Yeah, let's see. Google kicks catcher and charges the mound. Yeah, if you Google it, it's actually a guy named Izzy Alcantara. So I wonder if it's our Arizmendi Alcantara's brother of some sort. If you Google it, I'm pulling it up on YouTube now. Yeah, kicks the guy in the head and then charges. You gotta YouTube this one, and then he just swinging wildly haymakers. It's crazy.
I am. I'll check that one out.
Yeah, I'm gonna send it to you on Skype while we're talking to really just get the listeners excited. But yeah, I think Soler is probably, in my opinion, the biggest chance to bust out of the three of them. So I would probably rate those Bryant, Baez, Soler, although I don't think that we'll see any of them in the outfield next year. I really don't. I think if Bryant is up next year, I think he'll be at third base. And I think we'll have to, depending on what happens with Olt, I don't know. But
oh, I just watched the guy kick the catch. Oh, my God, dude.
It's awesome, isn't it?
That's epic. That is, yeah.
So I'll post that in the show notes, too. And so that way you'll have to decide whether or not you want to see what the run expectancy matrix looks like or watch a catcher get kicked in the head.
Yeah, let's do both. Yeah.
So thanks so much for that question, David. Next question moving on here is we called for nonsense questions. And let me reiterate and kind of explain what nonsense questions are. Nonsense questions are questions that really necessarily have no bearing whatsoever on serious baseball talk. They could be a question like we got the other day, which was, what's our favorite baseball video game? They could even be just random. I mean, I'm sure you guys want to know what our favorite cereal is and different things like that. Honestly, ask us. We don't care. We're just looking for mailbag questions, so fire away, viewfromthebleachers@gmail.com, or tweet us as well. But this one comes from Evan, and Evan asks, why are the Cubs so far off their shaving cream pie game? Kalish gets the post-game interview and nothing. It's more disappointing than Varus. And, Evan, I agree with you 100%. I don't understand why Kalish was able to fly under the radar and not get anything in his face, not get anything thrown at him. It's a travesty.
Well, I think, wasn't Matt Garza the ringleader of all that?
Yeah, but that's been around forever. You see
no,
guys getting messed with.
I know, but it just seems like on the Cubs that Garza was the guy that was always doing it. And it sounded like a lot of the guys on the team were a little bit sick of him. And not sick of that tradition, but like he kind of overdid it. So maybe they're just giving themselves a break from the Garza thing. And someone else is going to have to step up as the clubhouse clown, though. Who do you think that it'll be?
See, it's tough for us because we don't really see their personalities.
Yeah.
You know, I know Darwin Barney's got a pretty good personality from what I've seen. I've seen him interviewed on Intentional Talk before. So I know he could be a guy that could maybe do it. Other than that, I'm trying to think if there's anybody on the team that I've seen them in any kind of interview kind of revealing their personality in any way. And Samardzija, maybe.
Yeah, there's not a lot of guys with really, really strong outgoing after Garza left. And, of course, Zambrano. I mean, Villanueva, that attitude with that mustache makes me believe that he's got to have something going on, you know?
Yeah, I agree.
If a guy's going to roll that thing out, he's got to have
Dempster
something.
Well, Dempster was another one that was always a guy that was, a joker. I think probably Darwin Barney would be my pick there. I think that, I don't see a guy like Starlin Castro doing it.
No.
I don't see somebody like Wellington Castillo doing it. He just seems like a serious dude.
And the real young guys can't.
They can't do it. Maybe a guy like Ryan Sweeney or Nate Shearholt, somebody like that that's been in the league enough to at least maybe feel somewhat comfortable.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think it's hard for us to say. Along the lines, though, of kind of randomly messing with somebody's interview, what was the guy's name? It's an Asian player, one of the other teams in the majors that just completely interview bombed somebody's interview and like said his name and was just super outgoing. You remember who I'm talking about?
I know who you're talking about. I can't think of it, but I know what you mean.
And the video on that is classic. It's just like he just randomly shows up in the interview and just takes the interview over.
Yeah, I can't remember. I know what you mean, but I can't remember it.
Oh, I want to say he plays for the Mariners, but I don't. I'll have to remember what his name was. But
yeah,
I don't know which player would be that leader this year. But I agree with you. I think that nobody should be able to do a post game interview without getting messed with at all. It's just you have to get that in there.
You know, Baez could be the guy in the future that does it. He's fiery.
I was thinking Albert Almora.
Yeah, maybe.
Everything I've heard about Almora is just he's this electric personality that's just future face of the franchise. So
yeah, right. Ever since he's been drafted, you've heard that.
Maybe him being the guy. But I think it's hard for us to see when we're not around the guys and seeing what they do personality-wise and who's a joker, who's a soft-spoken, by-himself type of guy. It's just a little hard for us.
That's true. And you're right, though, with like the post-Dempster, Garza, Zambrano era, we don't have the real colorful guys on the team, at least that we can see.
No, not that I can see. I think maybe that means we need to bring somebody like Milton Bradley back.
Oh, God. You dropped that name.
He was colorful for a different reason.
Yeah. He wasn't. No one was amused by that.
No. I don't remember. I saw something. Didn't he get arrested recently? I think he did.
Probably.
I think he did. I thought he got arrested for domestic violence or something like that. Not a good dude. But
no.
All right. Well, let's close it out with some over under questions. I've got three for you here, and I cheated. I gave them to you ahead of time, so at least you'd have some time to put some thought into them. So
and I didn't. So it's we're good.
Well, there you go. It worked out perfect. So question number one: over and under a .296 batting average when all is said and done for your boy Emilio Bonifacio. And I want to note that .296 is his career high.
Yeah, I would say under. Just because you know that I am a believer in statistics, which means it's very statistically unlikely that he would have an average above his career high, especially since he is going to be, looks like he's going to be an everyday player, has been in started every game.
Yeah.
I think he's going to have a great year, but the .296 average, I don't think it's going to happen.
Okay, over under .280.
I'll say slightly over .280.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So that's kind of putting us in there where we are. I'm going to say under as well. I'm starting to come around and become a Bonifacio believer, but I'm not quite there yet. And I think we're going to see when all is said and done that he's not quite as good as everyone is making him out to be.
I think he's only hitting, you're right, he's slumping. He's only at like 600
like
or 588 or something.
Yeah, he's ridiculous. I wouldn't be surprised if he won Player of the Week. I don't know if they've announced that yet, but I wouldn't be surprised if he won NL Player of the Week.
Well, he probably deserves it, but with, I don't know, two voters tend to get, you know, tend to look at the records of teams, and so he could be hurt by that.
Yeah. Over under 10 saves for Jose Veras in a Cubs uniform in 2014, and I put the in a Cubs uniform just to be safe in case he gets traded.
Right. I'll say over.
I'm going to go with under. I think he's at zero right now, so
yeah.
I'm going to go with seven.
That would be a really just bad thing to happen to the Cubs, though.
He's going to be the closer for very long, though.
Well, I agree, but I mean, that means that was a real swing and miss signing. Really bad.
Well, was it, though, at the same time? Because how much did we, like I said, I just said that I didn't like spending money on relievers, but how much did we spend on him? I'm looking it up now. I don't think we really spent a lot of money on him.
We didn't break the bank, but I mean, if you sign a guy and name him your closer before opening day and he doesn't get double-digit saves, then you can't see that as anything but a swing and miss, I think.
Yeah. We signed him for 2014 at $3.85 million with a $5.5 million club option, and if we choose not to exercise that option, it's a $0.15 million buyout. So, you know, dude's going to be here for 1 year, essentially.
No, totally. You're right.
So I'm okay with that. And I tell you, I should have known that because of the fact that we are in our View from the Bleachers Fantasy League. And how'd you do in that league in week one?
I don't remember.
Oh, that's it. You're out, man.
I got to look. I'm in two leagues, and I did terribly in the other one, so I got to look.
You. Oh, this is good. This is good for you. You went 0-1, and you got you are a trophy winner right now.
Nice.
You are the proud recipient of the Whoop-Ass Award.
Awesome.
Awarded to the person who was whooped by the largest margin. And that was you losing to player to be named later by a score of 332 to 259. You got rocked, dude.
I've got, you know, and Buster Posey had a nice week. Mike Trout had a nice week. But a lot of my other guys did not have nice weeks, so that was a problem.
I had a nice week. The Hillbillies Getting Homers team, which is abbreviated to HGH, is in first place, 1-0. So
awesome.
Yeah, we had a pretty easy victory, so. And now that we've thoroughly bored our listeners, let's get to question number three. Over under 2.5 wins in the next six games that are coming up this week. We've got three against Pittsburgh at home and three against St. Louis. And I didn't look to see if those were in St. Louis or at home.
They are, because I'm going to be in St. Louis.
Oh, that's right. Right. Yep. So
going
three,
to the Lions
three at home against the Pirates and three on the road against the Cardinals. Over under 2.5 wins this week.
I'm going to say under. I'm going to say two wins. Like, we'll get one in each series.
So just like this week. I'm going to go big, and I'm going to say over, because I think we're going to get 2 of 3 from the Pirates, and then I think we're going to get 1 of 3 from the Cardinals. I think this week, the Pirates series, I think we're going to win, believe it or not, I think we're going to win games that we didn't think we were going to win. I think we're going to win the Edwin Jackson game against Charlie Morton. I think he's going to have a pretty good outing. And then I think we're going to win the Jason Hamble, Wandy Rodriguez game again. And then at that point, that leaves us Garrett Cole, Travis Wood. Garrett Cole is pretty darn good. I don't think we're going to win that game. Mm-hmm. So that's what I'm going with. I'm going to go with those first two we're going to win, but we can't get the sweep. And then in the Cardinals series, I know the opening game is Jeff Samardzija, Joe Kelly. Is that the game you're going to?
Yeah, I'm going to go to the Friday game and the Saturday game. So that'll be good. Yeah.
Yeah, so I think I'm looking here to see the other starters that series. Carlos Villanueva and Adam Wainwright, we can just...
I don't like that matchup.
No, we can pretty much just chalk that one up to a loss. On MLB.com, they don't have the starters for the Sunday game, but ESPN's usually pretty good at projecting them out, and they have got it as Edwin Jackson against Michael Wacha, and I don't like that one either. So I'm going to go 1 against the Cards, 2 against the Pirates, and I'm going to take the over and go with 3 wins this
week.
Hope
you're right.
Yeah, I think that'll get us out of the cellar from the power ranking standpoint, which will be good.
I don't think the power ranking guys took our pitching staff into account, though, because they should be higher. I mean, they shouldn't be much higher, but the pitching staff has been so great. They need to be they're not the worst team in the league. I don't think that's true.
No, I agree with you. I think 30th. I expected us to be 28th, 27th, 29th, right in that range, not last. I thought that was unfair.
Of course, now I'm trying to think who's worse.
Well, I'm looking to see here who's ahead of us. Everyone's ahead of us, but
right.
Who's directly ahead of us? We've got the Astros at 3-3.
Well, yeah, they beat the Yankees, so I guess, I mean, they'll keep out of the cellar for a while, but they're going to be back down there soon.
And then we've got the Twins at 28, Diamondbacks at 27, Padres at 26. So those are the bottom five.
Yeah.
I would say probably, I think we're better than the Padres.
I think we can be better than the Padres and the Astros, but that might be it.
What's the highest you think we'll get to in this year?
When the power rankings?
Yeah.
Like, we might have a week where we are peaking at, like, 25 or something. But
so you don't think we'll ever get out of the bottom 10?
No.
I think 15. I'm going 15. I think we're at one point going to get right peaked towards the upper half of the...
Oh, that's when we're going to have our 500 record this
exactly,
year.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Now you're following, man. Now you're following. Well, that's going to do it for this edition of the show. Remember, follow us on Twitter, email the show, and also iTunes, guys. Go on there, rate, review the show. We very much need your ratings, need your reviews. It takes literally 5 seconds to go on there and click a rate. I would prefer if you rated 5 stars, but honestly, just give us whatever rating you feel we deserve. We would appreciate it. We appreciate any feedback that you can give. If you've got any suggestions for topics, we'd love to hear them. Just email the show, viewfromthebleachers@gmail.com. And that'll put this episode of the books in the books. For Sean, I'm Joe, and we will talk to you next week.